Welcome to Joshua Space, a podcast all about books and pop culture. Today, I have the wonderful privilege of speaking with Tao Wong. He is a best-selling author of The System Apocalypse, A Thousand Li, and so many other amazing works. So Tao, when did you first decide that you wanted to become an author?
You sent me these questions and I was thinking about it. And it's an interesting question for me because in some ways, I find it wasn't a decision, or it was a series of decisions, I guess. I mean, going into your next question is, I've been writing little bits and pieces of stories and everything since as far as back as I can remember, really. You know, I remember writing some silly little story in a notepad book. I don't even remember what it was about. It was probably something about getting a sword. I read a lot of King Arthur when I was younger, and but I remember all of these things happening, and so I've started and stopped the process quite a few times over my entire life, and I guess it's just something that I knew I was going to be doing at some point. I didn't think it was going to be a career. It was just probably something I thought, you know, when I'm 60 years old and retired, I'll sit down and, you know, actually write a book kind of thing.
Yeah. So did you fall in love with reading before you started writing, or did you just kind of always start writing when you were younger and just fall in love with
stories? I was a reader from a very young age. Some of my favorite memories were being brought to, you know, libraries and, you know, reading as a youngster. And then, you know, I basically read everything that we had, or most of what we had at home, whether it was encyclopedias or romance or mystery or whatever. There was a book, I read it, you know.
That's awesome. So how old were you when you first finished writing a book, your first finished book?
I think my first, you know, kid-like book was probably when I was 7 or 8, I guess. It's like, you know, board level book kind of thing. It was not a, you know, 50,000 words. It's probably 200, 300 words, maybe. But I would say that's probably the first full story I ever wrote. I have no idea where it is. It's gone. It's definitely gone. I've traveled and, you know, moved so much. But I do remember sitting down and writing that. But I think my first actual novel that was finished was probably when I was 19 or 20, somewhere along those lines, while I was in university. I remember writing that. That one I had a copy of, and then I looked it over and went, no one's ever seeing this. Delete. It's bad.
I think that's a lot of people's first book. It just goes into a drawer and stays in that drawer.
Oh, it's not even in a drawer. It is deleted. It is gone. There is no chance of it being found, kind of thing.
That's awesome. Is it a story that you think you'll ever go back and try and rewrite, like the idea of it?
No. Okay. It was a very cliche kind of, you know, work. It was, the world building was always kind of screwed up. It wasn't anything special. I would never go back and try to rewrite it.
Okay. Yeah, I think that tends to be what I found a lot with authors. It's like the first book, it's kind of like the stepping stone. So you have to get that out, and then you're able to kind of refine your tools and develop a book a little bit better on the second run.
Yeah. Now,
speaking of like developing your tools, how many books did you write before you were published?
Well, I mean, I'm self-published, right? So that's not the same thing compared to a trad pub author like Andrea Stewart, who wrote the Bone Emperor series. She talks about writing 4 or 5 different books before she was published. For me, I think if we talk about full novels, I can remember 2 for sure that I finished, and probably half a dozen others that I started and never actually finished in between. But once I actually started writing again, most recently back in 2017, I just started publishing every single thing that I put out, whether it's objectively as good as it could be, you know. And I think that's one of the advantages and disadvantages of being self-published. You can put out your worst work out as well as your best.
Yeah. So did you always know that you wanted to be independently published versus traditionally published?
Pretty much. And so I came about publishing because I started writing for the fun of it, right? I was reading all of these works on Royal Road from Randall Lee Ghost Hound, James Hunter, Luke Chelimenko, and all of these great works at the game by Cosimo Yap. And I wanted to try my hand at it, you know, and at the same time, I'd read all of these older, oh, well, the Japanese light novel works that were all lit RPG at that time. And I wanted to try my hand at that, and I just wrote for the fun of it. At the same time, by the time I finished and realized I had an actual book done, I didn't have the time or energy or desire to go through the process of getting trad pubbed. Because I had a full career, you know, I was running my own business. I had way too many things to do than to go through the entire agency process and submissions and waiting multiple years. And so, because I knew about self-pub a little bit, mostly from reading Christian Kraus and Bruce's blog, I figured that's the way I would go. Just get it out there, you know, publish it and move on. I never really expected to make it a career at this stage of my life, kind of thing. This was just something that I'd written, thought it was fun, and I might as well put it out.
At what point did you realize that it was something that, okay, this is, I might be able to make a career out of this. Let me focus more attention onto it.
I was incredibly lucky. I published into Amazon when it was the lit RPG genre was incredibly hungry for any work. It didn't matter what level of quality there was. If you wrote it, people read it. And I say that because I was a reader back then. You know, it was the same thing. If it was written, I was going to read it. And so I was incredibly lucky that I published my work at this time where people were just picking it up. And so I started selling almost immediately. And I was selling at a very decent rate. I think my first month, I made a couple of $1,000,
Oh,
which
wow.
was amazing. Yeah, I mean, for the amount of effort I had thrown into promoting it, which was pretty much nothing, I threw it up on the site with a nice cover, and then I walked away pretty much because I didn't. I was not looking to promote it at that time. I didn't think it was, you know, something I could do or have the energy for. I was still writing on the other side because I was having a ton of fun writing. But that first month when I started seeing sales, and I was like, okay, I guess I should just keep writing and start looking into this a bit more. And you know, people like Alaron and Blaze had created all of these lit RPG Facebook groups, and that's where a lot of the work was being promoted back then. And so I joined those and I talked to people there a little bit. You know, I started kind of slowly getting involved in the promotion aspect, but super lucky. And I will always say that.
That's awesome. So with the System Apocalypse being your first published work, do you want to tell everyone what it's all, or the second published
It
work?
was the second. A Healer's Gift, which is The Adventures on Brad, was actually the first one that came out. That was the one that I actually started writing. And then about a month after I started writing that, I started writing System Apocalypse at the same time.
Okay.
And but yeah, System Apocalypse was the second series that I worked on.
With the other novel, because that's also a series, right?
Yep.
So did you kind of write a book and take a break and go on to the System Apocalypse and go back, or are you writing both consecutively?
I was writing both consecutively at the same time.
How's your writing process when it comes to that? Because they're different genres as well.
Yeah, they're both lit RPG, but they are definitely within lit RPG, they're different genres. One's apocalyptic, one is basically young adult or new adult fantasy. I don't know if I have a process so much as I sit down. I'm a what I call a planter, so I have a beginning, I have an end in mind, and I just write. Everything else in between. I generally have some goalposts of where I want to go with each part of the story. But the characters talk to me and they tell me what's going to happen and how they're going to get to the ending. That happens. And sometimes the ending changes. Generally, it's not a huge change, but there is often a small change in what the ending will be as I go along and write it. And so it's, I guess for my process, if there is a process that you want, is that I write whatever I'm most excited to read, because I want to know what happens next. Because as much as I kind of know what the ending is, I don't know what's going to happen in that next chapter. Or I have an idea of what that chapter is going to be because I've planned it out in my head. And then I sit down and I start writing, and that always changes.
Okay. That's awesome. I mean, that makes sense. I think it's difficult because I have a hard time. Like, if I start writing another project, my brain will know, like, it continuously bounces around. So it's either I'm going to work on one, or I'm going to write a few words in a billion different projects and never finish anything. And so that's pretty awesome that you're able to do both at the same time and give enough energy to both.
Yeah. And I do have to be careful, because I will try to work on multiple projects at the same time. And I have to be very careful about how I handle that level of energy, and I have to pick what the main project is, and that's the one that is going to get most of my attention. And then the other side projects, you know, I will work on them, but generally there's a main side project and maybe a tertiary one on top of it, and that one I'll peck at, you know, when I've got nothing better to do or whatever.
That makes sense. So with the System Apocalypse, do you want to tell everyone what it's about?
Sure. System Apocalypse is basically a apocalyptic lit RPG where the system, which is based, is an alien unknown power that comes to Earth and alters physical reality such that everyone gets character sheets, status screens, monsters start spawning, and everyone can level up. And they get classes and abilities and access to a shop, intergalactic shop. At the same time, monsters are arriving on Earth. Electronics have stopped working because the mana level has gone up too high. And aliens have started invading at the same time. So all of that is creating an apocalyptic environment that our hero, John Lee, has to deal with. He's caught in the Yukon because he's out on a camping trip. And so he has to get back to civilization, and then from civilization, try to figure out what the heck he's going to do to survive.
Oh, yeah. Because surviving in that is not easy.
No. Yeah. Everything from, you know, rats to cockroaches to ants, you know, are mutating and they're growing in size. And people have to fight and make their way through it.
So what gave you the inspiration? Because, I mean, especially when you first wrote the story, Lit RPG was not a huge, there wasn't a huge following of Lit RPG just yet. And there wasn't a ton of books to choose from. What gave you the inspiration to write a book like this?
For System Apocalypse, there were three series at that time. Scotty Fuchs wrote Earth Tactics Advance and Galactic Fist of Legend, which both have a somewhat similar, Earth Tactics Advance in particular is a post-apocalyptic or apocalyptic one. It's turn-based, which is kind of cool. Galactic Fist of Legend is a little bit different, but there is a bit of an apocalyptic element in there. There was an older series that was written and then dropped off called Change New World. And that was set in, I cannot remember if it was Indonesia or the Philippines. And that was written and then kind of dropped away. And then the other person at that time who was writing it was, and he's still writing it, was Puddles, Randedly Goes Home. And he had written his version of it. And his was probably the closest one that I looked at and went, hey, I want to do an apocalyptic one too. But I wanted to do it slightly differently in my own way. So, yeah. But all of those three were the ones that were influencing, you know, the entire apocalyptic idea.
Yeah, I'll have to check those out because I've read, obviously, like apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic stories. I've read the RPG stories, but I think the System Apocalypse has been one of the first, if not the first book that I've come across where it's lit RPG, but it is still an apocalypse. It's very much like the whole world is transformed into essentially like a video game, except we're still ourselves. And I think the concept was fascinating to start reading that series. It was Not at all what I was expecting. I mean, I like to go into books blind, so I kind of went into it with a little bit of foreknowledge, but not to the extent of what I was getting myself into. And it was just, it blew me away with the concept. I had never thought about something like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating, really, and watching how, drawing from that and how all of the other authors who have taken this have taken it in different directions. People like Xander Boyce, who wrote Red Mage, he set his in DC, which was really interesting. And I love his system that he uses, because he uses a crystal system where people, gain these crystals, and then you join these crystals in constellations, which give you powers, which, you have to upgrade. So it's not, the same like ours, where we, the typical one where everyone has strength, dexterity, whatnot. Ryan De Bruin, who's another Canadian, actually wrote Equalize, and his starting is somewhat similar to the system Apocalypse, because his character starts out camping, and he's the apocalypse happens at the same time, and he has to fight his way back through it. But he takes it in a completely different direction too, which is really interesting to me. And then of course you got all the more recent works out there, that Defiance of the Fall, for example, and the like, which all have their own takes on the entire subgenre.
That's awesome. So the System Apocalypse is roughly, correct me if I'm wrong, but roughly 12 novels in the in the main series. Then you have a trilogy that takes place in Australia, and there's two short story anthologies.
Yep. And that's there's another series, System Apocalypse Relentless by Craig as well, which is two books now, and he's working on a third, and it's going to continue, but Craig has a full-time job, so he can't write as fast as some of us.
Yeah, understandably. So are you continuing to write in that world as well?
For myself, I write shorts occasionally in the world. I'm working on a short right now, actually, which I desperately owe someone. He did a bid on it, for an silent auction. So I actually do owe him this story, but it's been slow going on it. But I have plans for a series afterwards. I just haven't had time. I've got so many other projects going on. But I work with a lot of my co-authors who always bring an interesting new perspective to the System Apocalypse universe, which I really enjoy seeing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's always fun to get other people's perspectives, especially on the main story, to see how other people kind of will interact with the story and different characters and bring different viewpoints into it. So I know you mentioned your other works as well, and I know one of the main series that you have in addition to the System Apocalypse is A Thousand Li.
Mm-hmm.
So what is A Thousand Li about?
It's a xianxia cultivation fantasy. So it is Chinese fantasy where the heroes or the protagonists are mostly attempting to ascend mortality and become immortals. In this case, A Thousand Li follows Long Wu Ying's journey from being a peasant all the way, or hopefully all the way, to immortality.
That's awesome. Where did you come up with the inspiration for that one?
There's a lot of xianxia works that follow this basic idea or trend that's out there. A lot of them are Chinese web novels, obviously. There's also works like Cradle that is somewhat similar to the same cultivation idea as well. But most of it was from the Chinese web novels that were being written previously. I just reused the concept or the general idea because I wanted to bring back some of the old school wuxia works and old school wuxia sensibilities and themes and tropes that I had grew up reading. And that's really what I hope to do with A Thousand Li.
That's awesome. Is your writing process when it comes to like fantasy or Chinese fantasy very similar to science fiction, where it's more of like a plan? So you plan the beginning, the ending, and just kind of see where it takes you?
Yeah, generally. A lot of these works, especially if you're working within a subgenre or anything, there are tropes and there are thematic elements that you're trying to hit or you should be trying to hit if you read within that those sections. And the things that you're trying to say, right? A Thousand Li is just as much a discussion, not just about the tropes, about, you know, honor and duty, about, you know, morality and individuality and collectivism, but also it's my own personal discussion about Taoism, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the concepts within it is about Taoist, is about enlightenment, you know, and understanding that and those steps towards it. And so that's the things that I'm trying to hit when I'm writing that series in comparison to something that's a little lighter, like Adventures of Brad, which is really a young adult, you know, fantasy novel that's really written in a similar style as a light novel from Japan, right? That's the inspiration for that one. So it's all, you're always trying to hit different things and trying to say different things with your work, or at least I am.
Yeah. Well, I think it's awesome when you read a book and it's very underlying, like there's a message, especially when it's not super, not, I don't want to say blatant, but when it's something where you're reading it and you're reading the story and you're involved with the story, but by the end of it, you realize, oh, there was a message kind of going throughout. And there were different things, different points that were hit upon, whether it was subtly or whether it was more obvious, but even where it doesn't take away from the actual story that you're reading. So yeah. I really appreciate books like that. I know currently I know by the time this podcast comes out, the Kickstarter will have ended, but you did just, you're currently doing a Kickstarter for a cozy fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, is it part of another ongoing series?
It is part of a completed series. It was a trilogy called the Hidden Wishes series. It's an urban fantasy gamelit series where the idea behind that was a normal mortal comes across a ring and he wishes for magical powers. And so the djinn who gives him that powers does it via a game interface so that he doesn't blow up. Because, you know, stuffing unlimited magical power into a human being never ends well. So you kind of have to build up to it, kind of thing. And so that was the series. It was just a very short trilogy. I enjoyed writing it, but I made a number of mistakes in the trilogy when I was writing it. And so I finished it up in three books. The Nameless Restaurant, which is the cozy fantasy, is set in the same universe, features, you know, the two characters from The Hidden Wishes, but it's really just a series about food. The entire series is just about sitting around and eating food and cooking food. That's
awesome.
That's it.
That's all. So slightly random, but on topic, what's your favorite type of food?
Oh, God. I mean, I have to say Chinese, probably because there's just such a variety of Chinese types of dishes available that you can everything from, you know, that's barbecue to, you know, steamed dishes and dim sum and, you know, noodles of any form and type. So it's kind of a cheat.
Yeah, it's like me whenever I say, because I'm half Mexican, so my favorite food is Mexican food, but you have a little bit of everything. So.
Exactly. There's always a little bit of everything if you look deep inside it, into any type of food.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, so with it being about food, is the food that's featured influenced by Chinese culture or Chinese food?
It's specifically actually is Malaysian. Malaysian food is the first book. And so we've got lots of hawker style food in there. Part of it is because I'm Malaysian and I love Malaysian food as well. I kind of almost consider Malaysian food Chinese, but it's not. You know, it's a mixture. It's fusion cuisine before fusion cuisine really was a thing, because, you know, we just had so many different cultures coming in there and mixing for, you know, hundreds of years that, you know, the food by itself just changed. So it's not, some of it is obviously Chinese, but some of it is very much, you know, fusion type of style.
That's awesome. And so going back to books, do you, when it comes to reading, because I know when it comes to writing, you write fantasy, there's science fiction, a little bit of everything. When it comes to reading, do you have a specific genre or genres that you prefer to read books in?
I mean, I mostly read fantasy and sci-fi, just because that's what I write in. It's what I've always enjoyed. But I will, because I grew up reading everything under the sun, I Most books I will read, I actually enjoy reading history books. Well-written history books are fascinating to me. I do a lot of romance and thrillers, mysteries are quite common as well, in the books that I have back here, but mostly, fantasy, sci-fi.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite in those two genres? Think that's one of the hardest questions, but it's like choosing a favorite.
Actually, it's not that hard for me,
Okay.
because this amazing authors. It's not really, well, I mean, the series is the Discworld series by Terry Pratchett. Things that he does in that series leaves me awed. He does humor, which I struggle with. It's not something that comes naturally to me. I love the way that he does it. And I love the fact that he's got such a variety too. And within each series, there's, characters that fascinating, and he talks about social issues within it as well. He satires so much. So Terry Pratchett's Discworld series, and then on the sci-fi side would be Lewis McMaster Bujold's Vocal Segment series, which Bujold, as far as I'm concerned, is the best living author that we have right now. Just amazing ability with words. And her amazing ability to shift between genres. Like her Vocal Signal series, you go from space fantasy, space opera, military sci-fi, all the way to romance. That's a romance, a civil campaign is a rom-com, basically, at the end. And she shifts all of that. She's got a mystery in there, and so on and so forth. She's such a great author.
That's awesome. I just read Shards of Honor for the first time last month. And so I am planning on reading. I've been having a difficult time with the series only because there's so many reading orders and because it is a fairly longer series. And I've been looking for, okay, which book is the second? They're like publication order, recommended order, storyline order. There's so many different ways you can read the series that I'm like, this is overwhelming.
Shards of Honor. I think after that is Beraia. If depending on which one, you do need to read Beraia right after, actually.
Okay.
Beraia, because it's the same main character, which is Cordelia Naismith, and I love Cordelia. She rocks as a character. I wish she had written more about Cordelia. But I would definitely read Beraia after that. And then there's a short story, The Mountains of Mourning, that is, I think, a better introduction to Miles Naismith than the other books, because it gives you such a clear idea of who he is and what drives him. And then you can read, I would probably read it in timeline order, but
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Timeline order is most likely the better way to go. So it was, yeah. I like to read things in publication order from time to time. And then, but when I was looking this one up, everyone was like, "Don't read it in publication order. It's you won't understand things." And I was like, oh, "Okay, I guess we'll do timeline."
I don't
Not.
know if I, how I read it actually. I think I kind of skipped back and forth a bit, because I was getting some of the books from the library, so I just grabbed whatever. The things that she does really well is a lot of the books you can there are things that you will miss out if you don't read it in timeline order. But you can generally get the gist of the most of the story itself. Whereas there are other works where, even mine, you start out in book eight and you're just gone. There's no way you get understanding anything.
Yeah, I will say going into because I'm currently reading book four of The System Apocalypse, and I think it one of the things that I really appreciated in The System Apocalypse so far is every book kind of starts off with a little bit of a recap from the previous ones. So you have like a rundown. And so I think because books one, two, and three is very much like a trilogy, you have this kind of overall story arc with a very not firm conclusion, but you do have a conclusion at the end. And then going into book four, it's really trying not to spoil anything. It kind of takes off a little bit on its own path, even with all the same characters. And so I think you could technically start with book four. I would not recommend it at all. But I think it's like you theoretically, because you have a little bit of a rundown at the beginning of what's going on, but you do miss a lot.
I try to write a lot of my works, and especially the longer series, in trilogy arcs, just because it's, as you said, it's easier for people to fall into, and there's a beat to them, to the series, especially with System Apocalypse, where each trilogy is very, they switch genres in some ways, which, you know, I know I've lost people between like book 6 and 7 because they switch genres quite drastically from apocalyptic to basically spoil space opera.
Okay, so that's one of the things that I loved in the when I first started reading, and I started with the first trilogy. That's one of the things I was like, I was hoping it would go there, because you could clearly see that the main character is lit RPG. You have a post-apocalyptic feel. There's all these things going on, but I felt like the way it was written, there's so many possibilities for it to become space opera, adventure. You have like there's so many other genres that you can kind of dabble into, and that was one of the things I was really hoping for, was we get a little bit of space opera and kind of going outside of Earth. And then I saw the cover for World Unbound. Bound, and I was like, oh, we're gonna get some space opera. I'm very excited for this. Thank you so much for joining and hopping on the podcast today. It was such a treat to speak with you and talk more about the System Apocalypse and A Thousand Li and all of your other works.
Thank you very much, Joshua. It was a lot of fun speaking with you too.
I also wanted to take a moment to say thank you to all of you who are listening to this podcast. If you wish to support it in any way, you can purchase any books through my bookshop.org affiliate link. And of course, don't forget to check out Tao Wang's work, A System Apocalypse, A Thousand Li, and most recently, The Nameless Restaurant. Don't forget to come back next week for another episode. And of course, in 2 weeks, there will be another author interview featuring Alexander Darwin, the author of The Combat Codes.